Broadcasting from Cincinnati, you're listening to the Ringside Reporter Podcast. All the news from the world of boxing right here.
Well, I'm talking to you the way I want to talk to you.
Now, here's your host, Eric Lorda.
Welcome to the Ringside Reporter Podcast, where we talk about the latest boxing news. If it's related to boxing, we'll talk about it here. My name is Eric Lorta, and I'm here with my co-host, Ringside Robbie, and we have a great show for you today. And as always, you can catch us on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com. Today we're going to talk about Miguel Cotto versus Canelo Alvarez. Did it live up to the hype? We're going to talk about it. Another big fight coming up this weekend with Tyson Fury versus Vladimir Klitschko. Our history lesson today goes deep, and it's the fight that changed everything. Literally. Ray Boom Boom Mancini versus Dooku Kim. But first, go ahead.
This put the end to 15-round fights.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And also, too, we get started with our first round of bouts for our lightweight fantasy championship. Mm-hmm. But first, we get started with the big one. Miguel Cotto versus Canelo Alvarez. This was a good fight, man. I tell you what, I'll start by saying right off the bat, all the things that I said about Miguel Cotto being washed up, et cetera, I was flat out wrong. He looked good on Saturday, man. He moved well. He boxed well. His defense was good. I think he could have beat or given a serious challenge to anyone in the 154 or 147-pound division. However, I think Alvarez was just too big for him, man. Way too big for him. Too big, too strong.
And did you notice that neither one of them wanted to step on the scale before they went into the ring?
I
would have loved to have known how much Canelo weighed on Saturday night.
Yeah.
I still say he weighed close to in between 168 and 175.
Absolutely. Yeah, he was at least 170. And you,
yeah.
But you know what? You know what I noticed about him with Tim Bradley and Brandon Rios.
Right.
Brandon Rios, when he got in the ring, he looked fat.
Right.
And he came in overweight, and he shrunk down to make weight. And when he came in, I mean, at the scales, he looked okay. I mean, he was drawn and everything like that. But when he got in the ring, he looked fat.
Right.
You know, and that was all that water weight coming back. Canelo didn't look that way. He looked in shape. He did it the right way.
And that's why I said last week, that's why I said to somebody last week, Eric, that Canelo needs to stop this 155-pound weight class business and become a full-fledged middleweight and move up to 160 because, you know, there's no need to make everybody fight at 155 when it's obvious you have no trouble making 160.
Well, this was a Cotto thing. I mean, this was a Cotto thing. He doesn't want to fight at 160, whatever the case may be, but, you know.
But even Canelo said after the fight, he said, if I fight Triple G, he's going to come down to 155. I'm not fighting at 160. He needs to cut that out.
He does, because he's a 160-pounder.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, that's the way it is. That's who he is. That's his weight, you know. You know, as far as the fight goes, I tell you, my prediction was that Cotto would win the first three rounds, and then Canelo would take over. I gave Cotto the first round, but really that could have gone either way.
Yep.
Cotto looked good, boxed a little bit better, moved a little bit better. The rest of the way, man, I thought Canelo was just too big, too strong. He out-muscled Cotto, walked right through every one of his punches to land his own. I was cringing literally in the middle rounds and from there on every time Canelo landed a shot. Those shots were just wicked, man. Those body shots he was landing and those hooks. I mean, you know, the uppercuts he was landing from the outside. I mean, everything he was throwing. And Cotto would hit him. But, you know, Cotto wasn't hitting him consistently either. I mean, Canelo was, you know, used great defense himself. He's harder to hit than you think, you know.
Right, right.
At the end of the fight, man, I scored the fight 119-109. I had it the same as one of the judges. The judges had the fight 117-111, 119-109, and 118-110, all for Canelo Alvarez.
Well, I agreed with one of the other judges. I had a 117-111,
Yeah. And, I mean, I can't – I mean, I had a 119-109. I mean, I don't disagree with any of those scores, to be honest with you, because you can always find – you know, you could have definitely found rounds to give him, you know. But, yeah, man, he for as good as he looked, he was just in the wrong – I mean, just in the wrong class, man. I mean, Canelo was just too big.
Now, let's talk about Miguel. We normally talk about the winner here for a minute, but let's start talking with loser. He's 35 years old. He's 40-5. Do you think he has a future in boxing if he wants to continue? Because rumor has it, now he's considering hanging it up because, you know, he was basically, he feels like he was embarrassed on Saturday night. Do you think there's people out there for him to fight? Because he got $15.5 million for stepping in the ring on Saturday night. Canelo only got five, and that's not counting what the pay-per-view totals add up to be. That was their guaranteed purse. What do you think Miguel Cotto's future is, if he has any?
It's funny that you mentioned that. And here's the deal here. The punch, to me, and as I'm watching this fight, and I watched it a few times over the weekend, the punch that seemed to be Canelo's bread and butter in the fight was that uppercut.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? What shocked me the most is that if you watch it, he's throwing that uppercut from the outside.
Yep.
And he's hitting it every time. The last time I saw somebody throw an uppercut like that was Buster Douglas against Holyfield.
Right.
He threw that uppercut from the outside, and well, you know what happened to Douglas after he threw that shot.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, this makes me think that it may be time for him to hang it up, man, because he shouldn't have been hit with those types of shots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he got hit with it once, okay, but he was getting hit repeatedly with that uppercut. I actually think he will call it a career after this fight, man. He's a great fighter. I mean, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's got nothing left to prove.
He really
has nothing left to prove. And now, as far as your question is, could he go down to 154, 147 and be competitive? Yeah, I believe he can.
Yeah.
I absolutely think he could. I mean, the way he fought, I expected, I was picking Canelo by murder in this fight.
Mm-hmm.
I said he's not going to see the final round, and he's not going to see it by a long shot. And, I mean, Canelo had a hard time. And this is, my dad and I were watching this fight. I said, you know what's driving me nuts about Alvarez is that he's not throwing combinations. He's throwing one and done. He's trying to land one punch at a time. He's not even throwing combinations at a clip. He's landing one punch.
That's a weakness of his. Yeah. He always has been.
You know. He wasn't throwing combinations in there. And, to me, man, I think him and Triple G would be a good fight, but I think they were talking about a rematch with Mayweather and stuff like that. I mean, everybody talks about Mayweather. He's retired now, whether he comes back or not, whatever.
Oh, and Oscar made it a point at the post-fight press conference to say that Floyd no longer has the May-September dates.
They booked them. I heard they're already booked. They booked them already.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, and the attendance for the fight, incidentally, was around 11,000, which I thought was like a little low, but I expected the fight to be a sellout, but, you know.
They used the Mandalay Bay, and the Mandalay Bay, every seat was filled for that. The Mandalay Bay is not as big as the MGM Grand. So.
Oh, maybe that was it then.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of the MGM, okay.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think he could go down to, you know, those lighter weights and make some noise. But for what? I don't see, like, any big any name that's going to garnish any kind of event. You know what I mean? Like, any kind of big fight. You know what I mean?
Well, like Cotto said before the fight, he said, if I win, you know, I look good doing it. He said, I want to call out Floyd and get a rematch. You know, and
I'm going to tell you what, that's a bad matchup for Canelo, man.
For Cotto I'm talking about.
Oh, for Cotto,
This is what Cotto said before the fight. He said, if I beat him and I look good, he says, I want to fight Floyd and get a rematch and win or lose. That's how I want to end my career, you know. But he didn't look good. He looked awful. And even Freddie Roach said maybe it's time for him to hang it up. You know,
well, Freddie Roach. That's funny that he says that because Freddie Roach said after the fight he thought they were, you know, not necessarily robbed, but he said they definitely thought they won the fight. He said he thought he won the fight.
Yeah, well,
Cotto,
of course Freddie's going to say that.
Cotto, who didn't give an interview after the fight, which I thought was kind of poor. He didn't give an interview after the fight, but he talked to Aura Primera or something like that,
mm-hmm.
and said that he thought he won 8 of the 12 rounds.
Yeah, well, good luck, Miguel.
Yeah, and there was a lot of people on the boards and everything like that talking about, you know, online and stuff, talking about, you know, they thought Cotto won the fight and this and that. Cotto did not win that fight.
He'll go down as the greatest Puerto Rican of all time because he's the only Puerto Rican fighter to ever win a title in four different weight classes. He's got nothing else to prove. I say cash your millions. You have a beautiful wife, beautiful family. walk away.
Say that again, boy.
Enjoy the life, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of his wife, man, did you catch her at the fight?
Oh, absolutely. Melissa. Hey, Melissa is always a looker, man.
My goodness, son. Man, HBO was all over that, boy. Every 5 seconds, boy, they were showing pictures of her and everything like that. I mean,
well, hey,
I don't find her all that attractive, but I mean, I think I could see how other people would.
Yeah,
I mean,
I hear you, and you got to save yourself there, buddy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway, well, as we all know, Canelo was mandated by the WBC to negotiate a fight with Triple G, but as you know how boxing politics works, the deals can be put off or set aside, because I read an article this morning that Mr. Suleiman said, yeah, I mean, if they work out a deal and they don't want to do it right now, we'll go along with that as long as there's other big fights, you know.
Corrupt,
yeah,
son.
Yeah,
I mean, they're all corrupt. There shouldn't even, you know, this is why I hope Heyman takes over and he creates his own belts, because they are all corrupt. Every last one of them. They will say one thing and do the other.
I know. I couldn't believe that, Eric. I'm reading this. I'm like, wait a minute. A couple of days ago, you said
right.
The exact. Yeah. You know, it's like, wow. So,
right, so let's talk about something here that we didn't get a chance to talk about last week, because it happened late last week.
Okay.
And, you know, since Cotto didn't win the fight, it's not really, you know, the prime subject. But
right. He
was actually stripped of the WBC title just days before the fight.
Because he didn't want to pay the $300,000 sanctioning fee, and he didn't want to pay Triple G the $800,000 that he agreed to for Triple G to step aside.
Well, he did pay Triple G the $800,000.
Okay.
They did pay them the $800,000.
All right.
And then he has to pay the $300,000 sanctioning fee.
Right.
And he didn't want to do that.
He didn't want to do that.
He said, no, I shouldn't be held hostage for $1.1 million. Well,
right.
You're not. You're not, because you had to fight Triple G. He was your mandatory.
Yeah.
That's what you accept when you take the belt.
Right.
You will fight the mandatories.
Right.
That's what you do. All right?
Okay.
So he's, you know, rather than spend the $300,000, he had already given $800,000. He said, you know, that was, you know, the fact that you had to give Triple G $800,000, that's your problem.
Yeah.
Nobody else's. That's your problem.
I mean, how would you like to be Golovkin? You go to the fight on Saturday, and you know you got to get $100,000 in your pocket for watching a fight, okay? I mean, that's pretty cool, you know?
Yeah, I mean, $800,000 to go watch it, yeah. Why,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we both seem to think that Canelo Triple G won't happen right away. Where does Canelo go if he pulls a duck and doesn't fight Triple G right away?
I don't know. I think he stays at 160. I think what they're going to do, is wait about a year and a half, just like Oscar said, because, you know, this was a big fight. Cotto and Canelo was a big fight.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to have a couple more fights and try to build this a little bit more.
Okay.
And try to build that, you know, to make it a huge fight. Because right now, it's not a huge fight.
No, I agree.
You know, and why fight and put all the money on the line if it's not a huge fight? You know what I mean?
But what happens to the fighter that's getting screwed once again here, you know?
Well, we'll talk about who he's got later on. I mean, because he fought this weekend, but not Triple G, but the guy that's a potential Triple G guy.
Okay, all right.
Fought this weekend. And,
right.
You know, I mean, he's got Andy Lee. He's got... you know, there's people out there for him to fight, but, you know, again, there's not a whole lot of people for him to fight. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not a whole lot of big names.
And boxing fans are gonna continue to say he doesn't want to fight anybody.
Right.
You know, why isn't he stepping? You know, look, he's doing what he's supposed to do. How does he force somebody to get in the ring with him?
I mean, right. You can't. You can't. I mean, you know, look, I give you some money, you don't want to fight, you don't want to fight. What can I do?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, nobody wants to fight this guy. Sergey Kovalev came out and said that Golovkin hits harder than he does. He said they've trained many times, you know.
They used to spar together.
Yeah.
And Kovalev says, he's the hardest puncher I've ever been in the ring with. There's nobody that can hurt me like Triple G.
Right.
And mind you, Golovkin is 15 pounds lighter than he is. What does that tell you about Golovkin's punching power, folks?
Yeah, it's ridiculous, man. It's ridiculous. Yeah. No question, man.
Yeah. I seriously wonder what they're going to do with Canelo now. How does he constantly, I agree they have to build it up, but I guess Golovkin is going to continue to get paid for not fighting somebody, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you take that streak and you put it, you know, he's got the 21, 22 knockouts.
Yeah, 21 consecutive, yeah.
Something ridiculous, yeah. You know. I mean, he's the middleweight champion. I don't care about the linear champion anymore.
Yeah.
The fact that Cotto was a linear champion was just, you know.
And now Canelo has that.
Canelo's got it and he doesn't want to fight him.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, pretty soon the linear champion doesn't really mean much, you know what I mean? If you're not willing to fight the best out there. And that's the thing with Triple G. He fights everybody. It doesn't matter. He's fighting all comers. So
there's two fighters out there in boxing who actually fight everybody that they're supposed to. They never duck anybody. One is Triple G, and one is Vladimir Klitschko.
Yeah.
They fight everybody, you know, and they both get criticized for their opponents, you know.
If I were Triple G, the best route you can go with right now is, you know, if the WBC, if Canelo's not going to fight you, then go after the other belts. Because you want all roads to come through you.
Yeah.
That way you've got nobody, you know, if the big fights will now come to you. If you've got all the property, all the belts, the big fights come to you.
Well, he's only got one more belt to collect if I remember correctly, and that's Andy Lee's. And Andy Lee has already said, if I beat Billy Joe Saunders, I'm fighting him in New York in March.
Yeah. That's a huge fight right there. That's a huge fight, you know, in New York.
And remember, Andy Lee has already agreed to fight him once. So yeah. Andy Lee is not scared of Triple G.
No, and I think he'll get past Saunders. So,
yep. Yeah,
absolutely, man. So now Cotto wins the belt now because Cotto, I guess, agreed to the sanctioning fees. What do you make?
You mean Canelo, yeah.
Canelo, sorry. Yeah. What do you make of Cotto not paying those?
It tells me that he had no intentions on ever fighting Triple G if he won.
That's kind of what it tells me, too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what it tells me. I mean, he paid him enough money to step aside so they can make this fight happen.
Yeah.
And then they wanted him to pay the sanctioning fee. Because sanctioning fee and step-aside money, two different things.
And Canelo said, I'm going to pay that with no problem. And even Canelo said after the fight, me and Triple G are friends, but, you know, I'm willing to do business. Yeah. At least that's what he said publicly. Now we'll see what happens privately.
Yeah. And I think it's good business to wait on that fight. I really do. I think it's better business, you know, because, you know, as much as everybody wants to see the fight, I mean, look, it's not a big fight yet.
No.
You know what I mean? It's just not. So why?
And look, we still have a lot of questions in regards to Canelo. Stamina issues, the fact that he does not throw combinations. The more I see him, the more I'm convinced he needs a makeover. He needs to get a new trainer in his corner. I know he's loyal to those two guys. But it's time for him to totally improve. He needs to go to an experienced trainer and do what Cotto did. Cotto realized after he lost to Austin Trout, look, I need to do something because what I'm doing isn't working. So he called Freddie Roach. Canelo needs to kind of do the same thing.
Yeah.
You might disagree with that.
No,
I don't know.
I absolutely agree. After watching him and his dominant as he looked, you know what's funny is I actually think Cotto looked better you know, in this fight, if that makes any sense at all. Cotto impressed me more than Canelo did, because I expected Canelo to just wipe the floor with him.
Uh-huh.
And that really, you know, it was a wide, to me, it was a wide margin on the scorecards, but it really didn't happen like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
It was more like Cotto impressed me for being able to stay in there, for being able to move like he did and throw combinations. He was just fighting a bigger guy.
Yeah.
And he was fighting a stronger guy. So when you got two guys like that with the same skill levels or similar skill levels, the bigger guy is usually going to win.
Right.
You know, and that's just the way, and that's kind of the way it washed out there.
Right. But
Canelo, man, throwing those uppercuts from the outside, that's dangerous.
Yeah.
That's just dangerous. It's bad technique, you know.
And I can picture him actually in the ring with Golovkin. And you know how Golovkin cuts off the ring?
Yeah.
You know, if Canelo throws one of those uppercuts like he did against Cotto,
right,
Golovkin's going to see that opening and say, thank you very much, time to go to sleep.
Yeah, I mean, both of those guys, I mean, and the thing is, and, you know, I kind of looked at Triple G as like a Canelo kind of guy, you know, where he's, you know, he's kind of moving forward, kind of plodding and stuff. After that David Lemieux fight, man, I don't view him like that anymore. That guy can fight, you know?
Look at what he did against a mover like Willie Monroe, who he completely had Monroe thoroughly confused. He couldn't box. He couldn't move. He tried to do everything he could to stay away from him, and it didn't work. Canelo doesn't have that kind of movement. I think Triple G is Canelo's kryptonite, so to speak.
Yeah, I think it could be. Could very well be, man. That's for sure.
No wonder why Canelo wants to build up that fight.
Right.
I don't think he's going to survive once it happens.
No, I don't know, man. That's going to be, I don't know if he necessarily knocks out Canelo, man, but it doesn't look good for Canelo in that fight, man. I got to be honest. Canelo's my guy. I like him, but
yeah,
man, he showed a lot of, there was a lot of flaws, I guess, exposed that night.
Yeah, no, there's Swiss cheese there, and it needs to be fixed.
And he doesn't show any signs of going to get a new trainer.
No, but
he really needs to.
It's needed. It's needed. You know, I mean, I believe in loyalty, but you know, it's time.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
You know, we don't need the fireman, so to speak, but we need somebody who can step up your game, like a Nacho Beristain, since Canelo speaks Spanish, for example.
Oh, I think that'd be a great fit.
You know, go to somebody like that.
Right.
You know, because you have the potential of being one of the best fighters of all time. I mean, look at this, Eric. 48 years old. I mean, 48 fights, and he's only 25 years old. I mean,
didn't he turn pro at 15?
Yeah.
That's obscene. I mean, what in the world? You know?
Because in Mexico, you can do that.
Wow.
Look at Julio Cesar Chavez. He senior. He did the same thing. You know, 14, 15 years old, turn pro, and, you know, that's what you do in Mexico. Well, it's time to go back to your roots, son, and get a Nacho Beristain and let him fix your game, brother.
He's got to work on his defense, and he's got to work on his combinations, man.
Yep.
He really does.
Because I can see Triple G taking full advantage of your weaknesses.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Anybody, I mean, if Cotto was his size, you know, and I know they both weighed in similar 2 pounds of each other, but if they clearly saw one was bigger than the other.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, but if Cotto was a natural middleweight, Cotto would have demolished him.
That's right.
I have every, you know, because he wouldn't have been able to walk through those shots.
You know, one of the good things about Miguel losing this fight is we don't have to worry about Miguel Cotto diva tactics anymore.
Right. Yeah, that's. I wasn't a big fan of Cotto's, like, outside the ring and, like, you know, him ducking people and this and that. And, you know,
I mean, he reminded me so much of Floyd. It's like, give me a break.
Yeah.
Don't take a page out of Floyd's playbook.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. So. But no, Viva Mexico. Congratulations, Canelo. Step up to the plate and fight your kryptonite. Let's get it signed, son.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, let's talk about the other co-main, one of the co-mains anyway, Guillermo Rigondeaux versus Drian Francisco. I'd rather talk about Cotto's wife some more.
Look, Eric, I've got to be honest. I liked Guillermo Rigondeaux.
I do too.
I always have, but I thought this performance stunk to high heaven because he was in there with a guy that didn't. It was obvious from the beginning the guy didn't want to fight. It was to me, and I've never said this before about a Guillermo Rigondeaux fight, but I found this to be extremely boring.
Yeah, Rigo averaged about 10 punches per round, 10 punches landed per round. That's really all he needed. I mean, each round, if you saw one round, you saw the rest of them. Francisco was completely out of his element in this fight. You know, he was there roughly on like 2 weeks' notice, and it really showed.
I understand that there was short notice involved, and I understand that Rigo had been out of the ring for almost a year. I get that. I'm willing to give him a pass. But for those of us that have always talked about how good he is and how wonderful he is to watch, we didn't get much on Saturday night to help him build his case.
I don't know. I mean, look, the guy pitched a shutout. I mean, the guy pitched a shutout. He pitched an easy shutout.
I agree.
He didn't have to do anything. I mean, he didn't really have to put out almost, it was almost effortless, like a sparring session, it looked like.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't get hit much. He didn't, you know, the other guy was really confused in there. You could see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he fell against the ropes. He almost fell out of the ring in the one round without getting hit, you know,
yeah.
Just completely off balance, it looked like.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it was just, you know, I can understand, like, how, you know, the thing is, like, with the pay-per-view and stuff like that, you know, to me, like, you know, your everyday casual fans are the ones that drive those papers, the guys who don't know who Rigondeaux is.
Right.
They just hear how great he is.
Right.
And when they watch this fight, this is not their kind of fight. You know, I actually enjoy the fight. I actually enjoy watching Rigo fight, and I enjoy watching him do what he does. But I thought that if he's landing 10 punches per round, if he would have upped his activity a little bit more, then he would have got this guy out of there.
Yeah.
On the flip side, if he upped his activities more, he opens himself up for more chances, and that's
right.
What he doesn't want
now,
to do. So
I do have to applaud him. I've never heard him say this before. I don't know if HBO was making this up, but he said he's willing to go down to 118 to fight Chocolatito. I mean,
well, Chocolatito's 112. I heard him talking that nonsense, and I was like, you know, come on, that's still 6 pounds.
I guess Roman, after one more fight at 112, is going to move up. He's going to move up to 115, and because he also talked about fighting Lomachenko at 124.
Why don't you go up and wait and fight Lomachenko? Because you're asking him to come up two weight classes to fight you. You know, I mean, that's crazy. Just go up and fight Lomachenko.
Yeah. Well,
why do you have to fight? Why can he come up two classes to fight you, but you won't go up 4 pounds to fight Lomachenko?
I agree. Now, watching Lomachenko just recently and watching Rigondeaux on Saturday, if those two ever got in the ring, who would you favor?
Lomachenko.
Lomachenko, agree.
Because he throws more punches.
I agree.
And he's just as good. I mean,
see the problem I have with Rigondeaux is very good at what he does. I'm not criticizing him here, but the problem I have with the way he does things, if he ever gets in a close competitive fight like he would be in against Lomachenko, the judges would constantly favor Lomachenko because he's got more activity.
I agree. I agree because you know landing 10 punches around is not going to win it for you.
No.
You know, it may win it for you against Dreon Francisco, but it's not going to win it against Lomachenko or anybody with any kind of class in there, you know.
Rigo's
got some pop, man. I mean, he hit him with that right hand a couple times, hit him with the left hand, you know. And he's got some pop, you know, and he stunned him a couple of times.
Yeah.
But he never followed up.
And I noticed that, and I'm screaming at the TV, and my mom came out of her room. Well, what the hell's wrong with you? Well, this guy's not doing what he's supposed to do. I'm screaming at the TV. Okay, you've got him hurt. Why don't jump all over him, for God. And I I'm glad he won, but I did not like the way he won. I wanted him to be more impressive. you know, because it was obvious he was in there against somebody that he shouldn't have been in there with.
You know, what I want to talk about, too, on this, because what really bothered me is HBO's commentary on this fight, the promotion of Rigondeaux, you know. I think that HBO does a real disservice to Rigo during that fight, man. I read on one of the forums after the fight, they said that this is how the UFC would promote Rigo. And they said they would call him the best pound-for-pound fighter on the planet. Nobody can touch him. You've got to see him fight.
Yeah, and Jim Lampley, Roy Jones, and Max Kellerman spent the whole night
just ripping him.
Yeah.
He says, you know, the way boxing, you know, promotes this guy. Do we have to watch this guy again? And that's exactly what the HBO announcers were basically saying. At the same time, we're talking about him and Lomachenko fighting. Why would I want to pay for that fight? Why would I want to watch this guy fight? Why would you want this guy on your station again? If he's that boring, why do we want to watch him fight?
Number one,
anybody pay a cent to watch him fight Lomachenko? Anybody tune in?
Well, number one, a Lomachenko-Rigondeaux fight would not be on a pay-per-view.
No.
Yeah, that would be regular HBO, you know, if anything. You know, or maybe HBO After Dark or something, you know. I hated the way those three guys treated this man. And, you know, I'm glad that Rock Nation is willing to, you know, promote him. But, you know, they're going to have very difficult work to promote this man. I can see all kinds of trouble ahead.
If I was Rock Nation, I would have been furious. I mean, just furious. Because it's a co-promotion. We're on HBO. I want to put my fighters, Andre Ward, on Miguel Cotto, all of them on HBO. The house fighter is Miguel Cotto. We want to we're putting him on HBO. We're putting our guy Rigo on HBO.
Yeah.
And you just completely down him.
Yeah.
I mean, instead of giving him, you know, hey, this is the guy that's one of the pound for pound. I mean, they just lambasted him, man.
Yeah. Look, I don't believe in pound for pound lists, but they basically said this guy doesn't belong in the top 10.
Lampley's a moron. I can't believe he doesn't have Rigo in his top 10. He thinks 10 fighters are better than him.
Yeah,
and
I'm thinking to myself, I'd like to know your list, Jim, because you've been announcing boxing for 25 years or more.
He knows better, you know. He knows better than that.
Give me a break,
right? You know what you're looking at in there. He knows better than that.
Yeah,
but I don't expect, like I said, man, the average guy at the bar watching the fight. Yeah, I expect him to say it's boring. The commentators, though, Harold Letterman, Jim Lampley, you know, Kellerman, all of those guys. That's not really what I expect. Because he put on, I mean, if you watch him fight, man, he put on a clinic in there.
But honestly, for the first time that I've seen him fight, I could honestly see why a lot of people would say that. Look, I'm glad he won, but I didn't like the way he won.
Yeah, he didn't take any risk. He didn't take any risk, but he never does.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
that's him. And that's why he's a hard sell.
Yeah.
And... you know, but, I mean, the promoters and stuff like that, I mean, if I would be, like I said, furious if I was Rock Nation, I mean, with the promotion of this guy that was done on that telecast.
It was awful. You know. And then we got Francisco Vargas to talk about, too, don't we?
This was the fight of the night, man. This was the fight of the night, man, in my opinion. Francisco Vargas versus Takashi Mira. What an amazing fight this was, man. Mira caught him was caught in the opening round by Vargas, who almost had him out. He was literally seconds away from this fight being stopped.
Yeah.
You know, the next few rounds, however, saw kind of a changing of the guard, man. Mira put a lot of pressure on Vargas, and that's where he started breaking Vargas down. Vargas was looking really, really uncomfortable in there after that first round. Second and third, you know, and when the fourth round rolled around and he floored him, I mean, that I came out of my seat after that. I was like, you got to be kidding me.
I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, this one's over. As soon as that punch landed, he's not going to get up, you know?
Yeah, I thought if he does get up, he's not going to make it much longer, you know? And in the eighth round, he was out again in the eighth round, man. They zoomed in on that eye. That eye looks horrible.
Oh, it was pathetic. It was,
I said, man. And then in the ninth round, man, he just came out. Vargas came out firing, caught Mira again. Mira dropped, beat the count. When he got up, though, I mean, he was staggered up. And when he got up, he put his hands up in, like, some crazy fashion. And you could tell he was still hurt. I mean, real bad. And then Vargas came in for the kill, and that was it, man. Tony Weeks stopped the bout at 131 of the ninth round. Just an amazing comeback win, man. Just amazing.
Absolutely.
Because he was definitely losing that fight. I thought he was definitely losing that fight. I want to see it again.
Yeah, I hope we get a rematch. Yeah. Now, this was for a title, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I don't remember if what it was, but I know Mira had the title, and then Vargas took it away. So
it was a WBC 130.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. Yeah. Now, there was also supposed to be another fight on the undercard, another title fight on the undercard. Randy Caballero and Lee Haskins were actually supposed to fight on the Cotto Canelo undercard.
That was the only fight that they did not televise.
Well, they didn't televise it because it was canceled.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
okay.
Caballero came in 5 pounds overweight.
Well, let me see.
5 pounds over the 118-pound limit.
Okay, yeah. Randy did say in interviews recently that he had been having difficulty making the weight. So
Well, that wasn't a rumor, man. That was absolute fact.
Well, no, he was honest about it.
But five pounds?
Yeah. Well, I think he just outgrew the division, and that just makes it wonderful, because if he moves up to 122, he's in the same category as all those other killers at 122.
Right.
So, you know.
Yeah, but I was surprised, man. So Randy Caballero, 5 pounds heavy, and they just canceled the fight. Lee Haskins refused to fight, so they.
I think Randy's going to give up his title and.
Well, he's already lost it. Yeah, he lost it on the scale. So.
Yeah, and so I think he's officially going to move to 122, and I think we're going to see him fight there in the future.
Yeah, you got no choice now.
Yeah.
You know. Now, as far as the rest of the weekend goes, Diego De La Hoya won an easy unanimous decision over Giovanni Delgado on Friday.
Okay, Oscar, I got a question for you. Why do you treat your family members so badly?
That was so silly, man. That was so silly. Of the card that needed it, this needed it. I mean, because they had Rigo on there. Andre Ward pulled out. They put Rigo on there, who, didn't exactly give the best performance according to the crowd and everything. Not really a crowd pleaser, knowing that. And you put Diego De La Hoya on, what is it, the Friday?
Yeah.
Why don't you put him on the main card here?
Televise
him. He's got your name. Put him on there. I mean, that's name recognition.
Other than the last two fights that have been on Ring TV, I've seen every one of his fights.
Yeah.
He's worth watching.
Right.
You could have put him on the pay-per-view. I mean, especially if you knew the Randy Caballero fight was being canceled. Why didn't you, as your nephew's promoter, why didn't you just say, you know what, we'll move your fight to Saturday. We'll put it on the pay-per-view card. What the hell's wrong with you, Oscar?
Well, instead, let's put it on Ring TV where nobody sees it.
Yeah.
Idiot. That should have been train wreck of the week, too. All right.
Yeah, and we got more about Oscar coming later.
Right, exactly, yeah. And then Gilberto Ramirez won a unanimous decision over Gevorg Kachikian.
He totally dominated this individual from start to finish.
Let me tell you what, man, Ramirez now 31-0, and people are speculating that this could be the next guy to challenge Triple G.
Well, okay.
He may have to come down and wait to do it, but we'll see why not.
Yeah. Step in there with a killer, and let's see if you still have your O afterwards.
Yeah, I think it'd be a good fight, man. He's a good fighter.
Okay.
Arthur Abraham broke my heart this weekend, Robbie.
Martin Murray, why did you let us down, okay?
Martin Murray, what are you doing? Arthur Abraham won a split decision over Martin Murray. Martin Murray is now contemplating retirement after his most recent loss. It was a split decision, but I heard it was, one of those things.
Yeah, okay.
Across the pond in Manchester, Anthony Kralla scored a fifth-round KO to dethrone WBA lightweight champion Darlys Perez on Saturday night in Manchester, England.
Well, I've never cared about Darlys Perez. So good riddance to bad rubbish.
Yeah, this was the one. They fought a couple of months back, and there was a lot of controversy on that. I mean, they were talking about reversing the decision and everything. This was bad.
Oh, yeah.
And so they said, now what we'll do is we'll mandate the fight again. It'll happen again. Boom. And then fifth-round KO, so he took it out of the judge's hands this time. So
good
on Anthony Kralla, man. I'm glad for him, man. So
that's
great news.
Yep.
All right, so let's move to the upcoming fights here.
Okay.
Wednesday, November 25th, from Hialeah, Florida, Arislandi Lara versus Jan Zavec. 12 rounds for Lara's WBA regular junior middleweight championship.
Yeah, that's Jan Zavec, who fought Keith Thurman, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Lara should dominate this individual from start to finish. I hope Lara actually puts on a good show here and actually gets rid of this dude, but Lara is another individual that doesn't think about knockouts.
Yeah, Lara's like Rigo. Lara's a lot like Rigo, yeah.
Yeah. But, he should win this going away.
Yeah, I think so, too.
This will be on ESPN Wednesday night, 9 o'clock.
Yeah. I think, you know, like I said, man, Arislandi is and Rigo have a hard time getting fights because nobody wants to fight him. Because there's a lot of, and I think Eddie Hearn actually said it best, believe it or not, there's a lot of risk involved in fighting him and a lot of reward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just not. I mean, you're not going to get a ton of money for fighting Regan now.
Well, look at Canelo. He fought Laura, and a lot of people thought Laura beat him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And as Laura is one of the most difficult fighters to fight in boxing, period.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the guy's just a master, man.
Yep. That'll be the main event, and I believe there's another fight on that card.
Yeah, let's see here. It is Emmanuel Rodriguez versus Eliezer Aquino, 12 rounds bantamweights, and Udell Johnson versus Daquan Arnett, 10 rounds junior middleweights.
Okay.
And John Wesley Nofire versus Yasmani Consuegra, 10 rounds heavyweights. I hope they show it. They probably won't, though, so we'll probably have to read about that.
Or stream it or whatever.
Yeah.
And
let's talk
then
about
Friday.
Saturday. We got Friday?
Do we have Friday?
No.
No, I guess we have Saturday.
Yeah, November 28th, Dusseldorf, Germany on HBO at 4:45 p.m.
Yep.
in the East, which is the only time zone that really counts.
55,000 people, folks.
Insane. Vladimir Klitschko versus Tyson Fury, the big one, man. For Klitschko's WBA, WBO, and IBF heavyweight title.
Now, we agreed last week that the student was going to teach the teacher and totally win the fight, and that's exactly what happened. This time, do we agree that that it's going to be reversed? The student is not ready for the teacher, and the teacher is going to give him a 12-round education?
I think so. You know, I would love to see Tyson Fury win. I really would. I just don't know if he's ready for Klitschko. My problem with Tyson Fury is I don't think he has the power to deal with Klitschko. He's got all the other intangibles.
Yeah.
He's got the confidence. He's got the boxing ability. He's got all those other intangibles. Whether or not he has the power remains to be seen. I don't know that he does. And
for one of the few times in Vladimir Klitschko's career, he's actually stepping in the ring with somebody bigger than he is.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't think that'll be that. You know, for as big as Fury is, you know, like I said, for him not to have that kind of power, you know, because, you know, usually the bigger man has power, you know, because he's always punching down, he's a bigger body, he's, you know. But, I don't know what he's going to do. I know Klitschko has power.
Yeah.
We all
know
that.
Now, for those that don't know, who don't follow boxing, we're talking about a guy, Tyson Fury, who's 24-0, but only has 18 knockouts. That sounds impressive, but when you stack it up against a guy like Vladimir Klitschko, who's won 63 or 64 fights, only lost three times, all by knockout, and I had 53 knockouts. There's a major difference there. It's experience level. He's been the champion for well over 10 years. This is his 19th or 20th consecutive title defense. I can't really comment on Fury because I've only seen him one time. And the one time I did see him on US TV, Steve Cunningham actually put him on the floor. And if Steve Cunningham can put you on the floor, I know Dr. Steelhammer is going to put you on the floor.
Right. Right. I think that's the thing, man, is that, as much as I want Fury to win this and as much as I want to pick him, I can't. Even though, you know, Klitschko's got a suspect chin, man, he does. And
well, yeah, all three times he's lost, he's been KO'd.
Right, and he's by Corey Sanders, and, you know, he quit a fight, or maybe that was his brother who quit the fight with his shoulder.
That was his brother.
But, you know, man, look, I just don't know that Tyson Fury can really take advantage of that. I don't know.
Yeah, and we cannot, by the way, for those of you that want to criticize Vladimir Klitschko, we cannot criticize him, because what is he doing? Tyson Fury is actually a mandatory, folks.
Yeah.
Okay?
Absolutely.
Vladimir Klitschko fights all of his mandatories. What did he say after he got rid of Bye-Bye? He said, I'll be glad to fight Deontay Wilder, but I've got three mandatories to fulfill. This is number one.
Yeah, I mean, so how do you see this fight going?
I think Vladimir is going to end up knocking him out.
Yeah, I could see
that.
Yeah.
And probably HBO is probably going to do this from the damn studio. You know, like they always do with his Germany fights. I mean, why can't the network, if you're going to show this fight, why can't you send the crew over there? What the hell's wrong with you? Why do you have to sit in a New York studio and cover the fight that way?
I don't get that either. Yeah, I don't get that either. Just fly them over there, you know, or hand it over to Box Nation or Sky or whoever does the fight.
You know, because one of the big parts about having a Klitschko fight, you know, you get the interview afterwards, you know, in the ring.
Right.
You know,
right. And now, yeah, I mean, and this fight is so big over in Europe. I mean, this fight, you know, you figure it should be taking place in America, but it's so big over. I mean, 55,000, you know,
yeah.
Is amazing. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
And look, they probably could have filled up Wembley Stadium if they wanted to, and that holds 80.
Who's the undercard?
I don't know.
Cecilia Brikus versus Ramona Kuhn, 10 rounds female welterweights. That's the undercard.
Okay, well, we're obviously not
1,000.
We're obviously not going to see that.
No. Right, right. Yeah, they're not going to show that one, you know.
Yeah.
It'd be silly, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, just given the fact that, you know, Holly Holm and Rousey are, you know, doing all that work, selling out stadiums and everything like that,
yeah.
It'd be silly to show these guys, you know.
Yeah, really. But seriously, no, I think Vladimir is going to have a German party, and I think he's going to knock out Fury. Now, I don't know what round it'll be. I don't know if Tyson Fury's really going to present him any kind of issues. It depends on who we have as a referee. Hopefully they got an American referee over there who knows how to officiate a fight, because, you know, Vladimir likes to hold a lot and clinch and all that stuff. I hope we have a good referee that knows what he's doing. I mean, Michael Buffer is going over there to do the ring announcing. That's the thing that gets me. If Michael Buffer can go over there, HBO can go over there.
Right. Right. But there, I mean, you know, I obviously separate from the HBO crew, but yeah, I don't understand that either, to be honest.
Yeah. You know, I don't get it. But no, Vladimir is going to make his, I want to say it's his 19th. Successful title defense, and then he'll move on to his next mandatory, whoever that may be.
Yeah, I don't see. You know, man, this is a tough one, because, like I said, I could see Klitschko taking care of him early. I could see him catching him early. I could see him late. But
do you see this going the distance? Because I honestly don't, unless Fury can present a problem that I'm not aware of.
Yeah, I can't see it going the distance, man. I can see it either way. The only thing I can't see is a Tyson Fury win.
No.
You know, but I can't see it going the distance, because he's went the distance with lesser competition.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and he's went the distance. I've seen him just coast out fights.
Yeah.
You know, where he just jabs, and he's a boring fighter. He jabs and he grabs.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, he does have that power, and if he hits you. Now, what kind of game plan Tyson Fury has for him, I don't know. You know,
yeah.
I don't know what he can do to counteract that, but he is big enough.
I do give Tyson Fury a shot here, because you never know when Father Time's going to say, okay, enough's enough.
Yeah.
You know.
And if he can go to the body, which is something nobody does against Klitschko, if he can get in there and get to that body, and if he can move Klitschko, you know, get him moving, not just plotting, get him moving, either get him backing up, Get him, you know, get him uncomfortable in there. That'll be the big key. How he does that, that's on him. I don't know.
You know. No, but I kept 55,000 folks for a world heavyweight champion. And look, if Klitschko continues to win, he's eventually going to deal with the Alabama bomber here, and I think that'll be his next big fight.
Yeah, you know? Now Wilder, I could see taking him out.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I could see a way Wilder wins easily.
Yeah.
I could see a way Klitschko wins that fight. You know, so that's one of those fights you're like, okay. But with this one, man, like I said, I don't see a way that I have a hard time envisioning a way that Fury wins.
But we're at least a year away from Wilder Klitschko.
Very least a year. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Because Klitschko's got two more mandatories after this, and Wilder's got the fight in January. Then he's got the mandatory with either Povetkin or Anthony Joshua. You know it's going to be one of those two, because if Povetkin keeps playing around, the WBC is going to say, okay, Joshua, you're next.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree. So that'll be interesting, too. I would like to see Anthony Joshua. Well, I would like to see Anthony Joshua have some more fights, man. I mean, I think he's ranked way too high for where he is now.
Look, I agree with you. But, you know, if Povetkin keeps playing around, they're eventually just going to say, okay, next man up.
Yeah, I agree.
And like you said, Eric, would you rather get Joshua now before he totally learns, or wait a few years and have a real problem on your hands?
Who was the guy that Lennox Lewis fought? Was it Michael Grant?
Yeah, it was Michael Grant.
That he was like the up-and-comer, but when he fought Lewis, everybody knew that he was not ready for that fight. And
absolutely.
Of course he was KO'd in two rounds or one round or whatever.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's where Joshua is right now. He's in a real tough place, you know.
Yep, exactly.
So, because you're getting all this thrown at you now, you know, you got possible title shots, money coming at you, and it's hard not to take it, not to do the right thing and wait, and, you know, get some more experience so you can keep it longer.
And he's in the right organization. If the Russian keeps playing around and not wanting to take it, you know, they're eventually going to move on and say, okay, it's yours.
Yeah.
Whether he's ready for it or not.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, so.
But no, I tell you what, that is going to be an amazing sight. 55,000 on a Saturday afternoon in Germany for a world heavyweight. I mean, look, the last time we got a fight like this was George Groves and Carl Froch in Wembley Stadium a year or two ago with 80,000 people in London. And everybody wants to know why guys like Fury and Klitschko do all their fights in Europe. Well, this is exactly why. Look at how much money they're going to make.
No way you'll get 55,000 here in the U.S. None.
No. You know, I mean, hell, Golovkin, the reason why he was in Dallas about a week ago is him and his manager, Tom Laughlin, went to check out Cowboy Stadium to see if they could hold a Canelo-Golovkin fight and fill up 100,000 seats in Dallas.
What does that say about Golovkin, though, that he'll go to Dallas and fight him? I mean, that's Mexican territory right there. I mean, that's, you know, that's where he likes to fight. You know what I mean? Dallas, San Antonio, those are his areas. That's his area. That's not a Russian area.
You know what's amazing about that about Golovkin is if and when Golovkin and Canelo get in the ring, I bet you the crowd will be split, even though it'll be totally Mexican, because Mexicans love Golovkin.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They like his fighting style. They like his fighting heart, man. I mean, absolutely.
I mean, I bet you the crowd will be split down the middle, and Canelo will not have home field advantage, because it'll be 50-50 in the ring, and it'll be 50-50 in the crowd. What do you bet? Especially if they fill up 100,000 seats in Dallas.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, Mexicans are always going to cheer for the Mexican, you know what I mean? But, I, you know, like I said, man, I think that's, I don't know if it's necessarily a split crowd, But he's not getting booed out of the building, put it that way. And if Canelo fought anybody else, he would be, you know.
Yeah. But let's contrast on Saturday afternoon. Saturday afternoon, Tyson Fury is not going to get very many cheers at all. But all 55,000 are there for Klitschko.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a true, I mean, you got to give it to him, man. He's a true world champion. I mean, because he fights everywhere. He fights in the U.S., he fights over in Europe, he fights everywhere. And he gives everybody a shot. If you earn it, you get the shot. And, you know, like him or not, whether, you know, you think he's boring or not, whether you think he's fought anybody or not.
I love people like Triple G and Vladimir Klitschko because they'll basically say when and where I'll be there.
He doesn't duck anybody. Yeah, that's the one thing you got to say. He does not duck anybody.
Yeah. And he even openly said, "I will fight Deontay Wilder."
Oh yeah.
But he's got to wait because I got mandatories to fulfill, and so does he.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, let's talk about, the other card on Showtime now. James DeGale versus Lucien Bute, 12 rounds for DeGale's IBF super middleweight title.
I view this as a complete mismatch.
Yeah.
Lucien Bute does not have anything left. Why he gets a title shot, I will never know. And I think James DeGale is being screwed over here because he is the champion. This fight should be in the U.K. Where is it taking place?
Quebec
oh, Canada.
City. Yeah.
You know, give me a break.
Yeah,
why should the world champion go to the challenger's hometown? I don't get that.
Well, you're going to see it again. Well, you saw it with Pascal and Kovalev. So, But, because Canada, I mean, they'll sell those buildings out, man.
Yeah, I know.
Boxing seems to be popular everywhere except the U.S. nowadays.
And Kovalev is going to do the same thing he did. That fight has been signed, sealed, and delivered, by
January
the way, for 30th. January 30th. Yep. Mm-hmm. A week before the Super Bowl, by the way.
Right.
Yeah.
Also on that card, Isaac Chalemba versus Elider Alvarez for the WBC. It's a light heavyweight eliminator.
I have no idea who that is, but that means the winner of that fight, he's next man up for the ducker, Adonis Stevenson.
And the young master, Amir Imam, versus Adrian Granados, 10 rounds, junior welterweights. That Amir should keep his O.
Amir is a mandatory for somebody, and I don't know why he's not getting his title shot.
Yeah, he'll get it. He'll get it. He'll get it. I don't know if he'll come out, but he'll get it.
Yeah.
Now, also, too, on NBC in Dallas, Jermell Charlo, I guess that'll be earlier on in the evening.
Yeah, afternoon. Yeah.
Jermell Charlo versus Wilkie Camfort, 12 rounds for Charlo's IBF junior middleweight title. Also
that
on that undercard, Errol Spence Jr., my boy, versus Alejandro Barrera, 12 rounds welterweights. And also, too, man, a guy we talk about from time to time, man, that's really impressed us, man, Erickson Lubin.
Oh, he's great.
Versus Alexis Camacho, 10 rounds, junior middleweights. So that's the fight I'm looking forward to. And so that'll be either on NBC or it'll be on NBC Sports.
NBC Sports,
Yeah, so that's one I'm really looking forward to, man.
So we have a full boxing day on November 28th.
Yeah, absolutely. And that should end it. That should end it for the week. So
By the way, happy Thanksgiving to all. You know,
absolutely, man. Have a good holiday.
Yeah,
good holidays, man. So for sure.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about our history lesson this week, man. This is a tough one, but
very, very, very sad. I watched this fight live.
I did too. Yeah, I remember watching this fight, man. And this was something else, man. It was like, you know, because I've always been a Ray Mancini fan, you know, but you had a lot of respect for Duke who came after this fight. You know, he really did. November 13th, 1982, Ray Mancini versus Dooku Kim in Las Vegas. Ray Mancini was an Ohio hero. Everybody loved his story. You know, he was fighting for his father. He had a crowd-pleasing style. He was aggressive and came to get you out of there. Dooku Kim, in contrast, was born in South Korea. He grew up poor. He lost his father when he was two. He started boxing in 1976. You know, not a lot of people knew about Dooku Kim in the United States, but after this fight, everyone would know who he was. The thing that made this fight so good was that both fighters mirrored each other. Mancini and Kim went toe-to-toe for a good portion of the fight. to the point that Mancini briefly considered quitting the fight. Kim tore open Mancini's left ear, puffed up his left eye, and Mancini's left hand swelled to twice its normal size. Think about that for a second, man.
Yeah.
After the fight, Mancini's left eye would be completely closed. However, by the latter rounds, Mancini began to dominate, landing more punches than Kim. You know, in the 11th round, he buckled Kim's knees, and in the beginning of the 13th round, Mancini charged him with a flurry of 39 punches, 39 unanswered punches, and Kim just kept coming. They were looking for a reason to stop this fight. I really believe that. They were looking for a reason to stop this fight because it was actually getting one-sided toward the end of the fight. You know, it was really getting one-sided. But they couldn't because Kim would always fire back. He showed just an incredible heart. I mean, this is the kind of heart that you want to see from your fighter. You know what I mean? He always came back in this fight. After the 13th round, you know, Kim came out for the 14th round, and Mancini charged forward, hit him with a right, Kim reeled back, Mancini missed with a left, and then connected with a big right hand, hit him, and Kim went flying into the ropes, his head hit the canvas. Kim managed to get up, you know, he got up, but then just staggered around. Referee Richard Green stopped the fight, and Mancini was declared the winner by TKO 19 seconds into the 14th round. This was, at the end of the day, an amazing fight. Because they both had the same type of style. And Kim wasn't going anywhere. You know, that was the thing. I mean, you saw Mancini hit him with everything he had, and Kim wasn't going anywhere. And Kim, vice versa, you know, hit Mancini with everything. And Mancini, you know, everybody knew his story, man. He ain't going nowhere.
Yeah.
You know.
And this was the last fight shown on American Network TV.
Yeah.
And for quite a while.
Yeah, Kim went back to his corner. Dooku Kim went back to his corner and just collapsed. He had to be taken out of the ring in a stretcher where he was transported to a Las Vegas hospital. He was rushed into surgery with a blood clot on the brain. The blood clot was removed, but Kim passed away on November 18th, just 4 days later. The neurosurgeon stated that it was one punch that caused this. During the time, Kim's mother, that he was on life support after in the days after, Kim's mother came from Korea, South Korea, to be with him during this time. She actually committed suicide 3 months later by drinking a bottle of pesticide.
Yeah.
Referee Richard Green also committed suicide months later.
Yeah, and Ray won't talk about this fight at all.
Yeah, he said it still hurts. He said it still hurts him, you know, and he was never the same after this fight, man.
No, he never fought the same afterwards.
No, he never did, and he never recovered from it. He never recovered. This one ended his career, man. It really did.
Yeah.
Because he had, you know, and it wasn't the beating that he took. It was the beating that he gave out. It was the fact that what happened with Kim after the fight.
Yeah.
You know, he was never the same, and it's really, really unfortunate. Because Mancini was such a great fighter, they were actually lining up a fight with him and him and Pryor after that. You know, because Pryor had just beat Arguello, and then he fought him, and then this happened. He lost a ton of sponsors over this. Yeah, after the fight, Mancini was never the same. Obviously, he lost a ton of endorsements because of the fight, and it didn't seem like his heart was in it anymore. You know,
he was on Larry King Live several years later, and. A caller actually called in and said, "Well, Ray, can you talk about the Dooku Kim fight?" And Ray said, I will never talk about that fight. Nobody will ever get anything out of me. I'm taking that to my grave."
Yeah. You know, this fight also, too, and we talk about at the top of the show, the fight that changed everything, and this really did, because the fight actually caused boxing to take a look at the fights. And the championship fights were reduced from 15 rounds to 12 rounds.
Yep.
And which I think was great. You know, I missed the 15 rounders, obviously, but, you know, and there's a lot of fights now you look at now and say, man, if we would have had 15 rounds, he would have been in trouble, you know, or this.
That's right.
But that's why we don't have 15 rounds anymore, you know, and this is it. Years later, a movie was actually made about the life of Dooku Kim. The movie was called Champion. And if you haven't seen it, you need to. It's really, really good. And it really sheds a lot of insight. It really gives you a whole new outlook. And it's taken from the life of Dooku Kim and what he got, you know, what he went through in his life up to that point. Ray Mancini said he was there for the premiere of the movie and that the Korean people stated that Dooku Kim's spirit lives through Ray Mancini now. And hopefully Ray Mancini and Dooku Kim's family are able to find some sort of peace through this tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I know. Just, very sad history lesson this week.
Absolutely. It was such a great fight. Just a very sad outcome and one that, you know, that changed history.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And that was the reason. And for this reason, I chose Dooku Kim as the wild card in the lightweight tournament that we have, the lightweight fantasy tournament. That's exactly why I chose him.
Right.
So, speaking of that, let's move on now to our fantasy fight section. We have the lightweight championship tournament going on here. 32 of the best lightweights in history. Robbie.
Yep.
History right here. All right. So here's what we're talking about, man. Our first fight, Livingstone Bramble versus Roger Mayweather. All right.
And we talked about this before the show, and we actually we didn't remember, but these two actually fought one another.
Right.
We try to find people that have never fought one another. That's the whole idea of, you know, putting fantasy fights together.
But right, but in a tournament, you're bound to run into this. You know what I mean? Because everything was chosen at random, except the seeds. The seeding were, I chose the seeding, but everything else was chosen at random. So we thought about it last week. We're like, man, Bramble and Mayweather, that's going to be a good fight. Turns out they already fought.
Yeah.
So, and the way it went down is that Mayweather stopped him in the fifth. Mayweather actually went on the record. It was Mayweather by decision, but, you know, it is what it is. He stopped him. His corner got on the and went to stop the fight. That's why it was a DQ. So,
right.
But Mayweather got him in the fifth. And hey, you know, the best predictor of past behavior is behavior is the best predictor of future behavior. There you go.
That's right.
So
it
happened. It's good enough for me. I say Mayweather moves forward.
That's correct.
Computer also picked Mayweather to move forward too. Very close, by the way. So, all right, next one: Ike Williams versus Greg Haugen. All right, now Williams, and a lot of people don't know about Ike Williams, man. Ike Williams fought in the 50s. And had over 130 fights. And to me, this fight, we kind of break it down, and Ike Williams, you know, to me, Greg Haugen has always been a journeyman fighter. He reminds me a lot of Mickey Ward. I've seen, you know, a couple of tapes of Ike Williams, and looking at his resume, he fought the best in his time.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, to me, I think Ike Williams wins this by a decision, possibly by knockout,
Greg Haugen, you know, he's kind of a questionable guy. He was durable, you know, was in good fights, but, you know, I could see him losing.
Yeah, I could too. Computer, incidentally, also picks Ike Williams to win, so we're going to go ahead and choose Ike Williams to move forward.
Okay.
Bo Jack versus Jose Luis Ramirez. Computer, let's see here. We'll give you a computer pick in a minute, but Bo Jack started boxing in 1939. He was actually beaten by Ike Williams a few times, the guy who just beat Greg Haugen.
Okay.
Jose Luis Ramirez, on the other side, was a very good fighter. He really was.
Mm-hmm.
But in every one of his big fights, he lost.
Yep.
He lost to Camacho. He lost to Whitaker twice.
Yep.
I don't care what the judges say. He lost twice. He lost to Juan Martin Koji. He lost to Julio Cesar Chavez, Edwin Rosario, Ray Mancini, etc. Every big fight he lost.
So I say with that resume, he loses this one, too,
I think,
right?
Just by default he has to.
Yeah.
You don't get any bigger than the all-time lightweight championship of the world, do you?
No.
The 32 best fighters, it's bound to happen.
Yep.
It's bound to happen. I'm taking Bo Jack by default. Computer picks Bo Jack.
There you go, yeah.
Unanimous.
Yeah.
It's done.
Yep.
All right, Bo Jack, moving on.
Hands of Stone has got to move on, right?
Nope, I don't think so. Let's talk about it. All right, so we got Roberto Duran versus Dooku Kim. We just heard about Dooku Kim fighting Ray Mancini. Gave Mancini everything he wanted. Everything he could handle. Paid the ultimate price in the ring. That's why he's here now, out of respect. This is why I selected him as the wild card. I feel he's deserving. Roberto Duran, on the flip side, is our top seed in the tournament. He's number one. Dooku Kim is a great story, but I think it ends here. I don't see any scenario where he beats Roberto Duran, man.
Absolutely.
Really
hands of stone.
135? Come on, man. Kim was not a finesse fighter. He was a brawler, and that would have been fine with Duran, who could do either, man. Duran's power would have been the difference in this one. I think he puts Kim away in four rounds.
That's correct. Yeah. No.
Computer picks Duran also, but you pick Duran or you pick Kim?
Yep. I pick Duran, man.
You take Kim in an upset. You're taking Kim in an upset?
No. I picked Durant.
All right, I agree, man. I think this is where Kim's story ends here. But yeah, man, I tell you, I think that it would have been a good fight while it lasted. I think it would have been entertaining because I think Kim comes straight forward. But
yep.
Man, I tell you what, there ain't no way he's gonna beat Durant.
Hands of Stone was wonderful. No Moss aside, of course.
Absolutely. So the next round shapes out like this. These guys move on. So it would be Roberto Duran. He's going to fight Bo Jack.
Okay.
Ike Williams is going to fight Roger Mayweather.
Okay.
All right. So now we go on. We're still in the round of 32 here. Jack McAuliffe next week. These are going to be the fights. McAuliffe versus Carlos Ortiz.
Okay.
Ken Buchanan versus Tony Canzoneri.
Okay.
Bobby Chacon versus Howard Davis Jr., which I think is a really good
fight. Oh, now, I've seen both of them. Of course, Bobby Chacon is from even closer to my local area.
Yeah.
So I've seen almost all of his fights.
Yeah. His big fights with Bazooka Limon and all that. Those were classics. Classics. And then the main event next week, Alexis Arguello versus Jorge Linares, the current champ.
Oh, yeah.
The current lightweight champ.
All right.
How's he going to do against Alexis?
I don't know. We'll find out next week.
We're going to find out, son. All right. Good deal. All right. Let's move ahead to our news and rumors section here.
Okay.
All right. Legendary light heavyweight Bob Foster passed away this weekend at the age of 77. Prayers for him and his family, of course. Bob Foster, man, one of the great light heavyweights, man.
Yeah, and he actually moved up to heavyweight and fought both Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali, and both of those guys knocked him out.
Yeah, he didn't carry that power up to heavyweight, man. That's the thing, is his left hand, he had a huge left hook, man, but he never carried that power up to heavyweight. You know what I mean?
No, he did not.
He just couldn't. You know, it's just one of those things, man. He's a light guy. He just wasn't a heavyweight frame.
Right.
You know? Now let's go to the opposite of heavyweights here. Scott Quigg and Carl Frampton, they're heating up there. Apparently they had to be separated at their press conference last week. This fight's really starting to heat up, man. There's no love lost between these guys, man. So this should be a great fight.
February 27th, that fight is scheduled for.
Yep, and they do not like each other, man. That's for sure.
Mm.
All right, so you waited for it all week. Our train wreck of the week. Oscar De La Hoya.
Yep.
So just days after penning an article in Playboy magazine trashing Floyd Mayweather for being boring and not taking chances and basically saying, you know, you suck, good riddance.
Yeah.
Oscar has had a change of heart. De La Hoya, De La Hoya stated, you know what? He said this to a magazine or something. He said, you know what? I'm going to give you, this is a direct quote. You know what? I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to give an exclusive right now. Floyd, let's bury the hatchet. I'm shaking. I'm a little teary-eyed. Floyd, let's bury the hatchet. We don't have to be friends. We don't have to be best of friends, but let's bury the hatchet for the sake of the sport. De La Hoya addressed the money.
And did money respond?
I don't believe he did. Yeah, I don't think he did. And I don't blame him. You know.
Okay.
But, you know, seriously? You just sat there and trashed the guy, and now you want to do business with him.
You wrote a letter to a national magazine.
Now, granted, nobody reads the articles in that magazine anyway, but that's beside the point.
You made sure it was published, and then after it comes out, I have a change of heart. Okay.
Maybe you should have thought about that before you trashed him. You know, I mean, this just makes him look stupid, man. It makes him look desperate.
That's why I say I think Oscar's doing the pantyhose thing and doing the drugs thing. Come on, Oscar, come on.
Yeah.
It's treating your nephew like crap.
Get off the powder, son.
Yeah.
Get in the game, man. Come on. Go dry up. You know, it makes it, you know, why trash him and then want to work with him? You know what I mean? It makes no sense.
Yeah. Give me a break.
Just stupid. Stop being an idiot, you know? Yeah, so that's our train wreck of the week there.
Well, congratulations for the Adrian Broner train wreck of the week.
That's right. Congratulations, Oscar.
Yeah.
All right. Vitaly Klitschko is helping Klitschko train for the Tyson Fury bout. It's reported that the two brothers are sparring in preparation for next week. I think this is a great idea because they're both about the same size.
That's right.
You know, Klitschko and Fury about the same size. I mean, they're all three about the same size. So there
right.
you go. I mean, I couldn't... Couldn't ask for a sparring partner.
And, of course, Wilder used to spar with Klitschko, both of them. Yeah.
Yeah, You know, so absolutely. And David Haye apparently is reportedly making a comeback. He'll announce it Wednesday, I guess today, when the show comes out.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's what reminded me of it. Yeah, when you said when you talked about David Haye, and cause I remember watching the footage of David Haye sparring what's his face? Deontay Wilder.
Yeah, Deontay Wilder.
And just flooring him a couple times, man. But that was when Deontay was younger, you know. I mean, so, yeah, who knows. But, yeah, it was pretty interesting.
Congrats. Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
We'll see if there's anything comes out of this.
Yeah. Chris Algieri and Eric Bonet will be televised on Showtime Extreme December 5th.
Well, so congratulations to Eric Bonet. I mean, I'm glad he's getting more TV exposure. He earned it. I mean, he did PBC a favor. Showed up, and basically took a fight that he didn't belong in and made a good showing of himself.
He absolutely did. He absolutely did. And I give him a real shot against Algeria, I tell you that.
I do too. Because Bonet is now going to be at 147 full time, which I don't know if that's the right move, because I'd like to see him at his natural weight class, but that's what PBC wants, so that's what they're going to get.
Yeah, I think so, and I think it is a good move. He's in his natural weight now, and so yeah, I think that's a good move for him.
Yeah, but I do think Chris is he's going to have a difficult night.
Yeah, it's not going to be easy, that's for sure. You know, he may win the fight, but it ain't going to be easy.
Right? No, he's going to have to earn it.
Absolutely, and also too, I wasn't sure if I mentioned this earlier in the podcast or not, but the rumors are out. We won't get an official number for a day or so now, but rumors are that the Cotto Canelo fight did around 900,000 buys.
Yep, and, a week before Thanksgiving, considering that other things were going on, I don't think that's a bad number. You know, because I was afraid that this fight was totally going to tank, you know, because of the backlash that May 2nd delivered us.
I think this is a tank. I'll be honest with you. I think it is a tank comparing to the numbers. I mean, I don't know. I imagine they turned a profit. I don't know what the I said it last week, and I can't remember what it was, what they needed to turn a profit for this. And I think they did. They obviously probably did turn a profit.
Mm-hmm.
But this isn't what they were hoping for. This is not what they were hoping for this.
Because Oscar publicly came out and said before the fight he wanted 1.5.
Yeah, I mean, this is way, way short.
But HBO never came out and said that, so I don't know if that's Oscar's wishful thinking or whether that's what they actually wanted.
He was coked up at the time.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you know, but to me, this isn't, you know, you want a million buys for a fight like this.
Yeah.
For a fight like this that drew a lot of press and everything like that,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, this was the main fight. There was Mayweather, there was a Mayweather-Pacquiao, and then there was this fight.
Yeah.
That were the two everybody was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And for it to only do 900,000, man, that's a big deal. That's a big deal. That to me is a big-time fail.
I can see your viewpoint, but I do think the time of year had something to do with it, Eric. I don't think it's a good idea to schedule a big fight so close to major holidays.
I agree with you. I hope they all tank, but that's just me. Because I want to see him on free TV. I don't want to pay for this stuff.
Well, I think if Al has his way, we're going to get our wish someday. Keep up your good work, Al.
Al is my Santa Claus.
That's right.
All right, and that's about it, man. So that'll do it for this edition of Ringside Reporter. As always, you can catch Robbie on Twitter at Ringside Robert, and I'm at Ringside73, and we will catch you next week. Happy holidays, everybody.
Yeah, happy holidays.
Thanks for listening to the Ringside Reporter podcast. Check us out on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com, on Twitter at Ringside73, and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Ringside73. Subscribe to us on iTunes.